Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
You're the one, the only, the icon, the tornado. Himself,
there you go.
Coming in pretty loud tonight, so.
Not?
You are.
Oh, that's good.
That is good.
You got more of a voice than I did last week, I'll tell you that.
Yes. Is that, you getting the flu? Is that what's going on?
No, I'm getting over it, I hope.
Over it.
I got to sing karaoke tomorrow night. Very important.
Whoa. Well, we have a great show for you tonight, folks. We have a very special guest. Just got him today, actually. Another hookup from our guy, Janowski. Matty Janowski. And this guy is making his pro debut in West Virginia on the 8th of February. I don't have an opponent or anything in front of me, or I don't even know if he knows his opponent, but his name is Jean-Pierre Augustin, and he's won actually two Massachusetts Golden Gloves. He's actually based out of Boston, and won gold in the Pan Am qualifiers back in 2011 as a cruiserweight. So, our resident psychic won't be with us until, I think, next hour, because he's got a tax thing going on.
Yeah, so I was going to make fun of him about his email, because he sent it on Tuesday. He's like, our show's tomorrow night, and I was like, oh, shit, is it Wednesday already?
Yeah, well, so I'm going to try to load the second half of the show, the MMA stuff for you. So we got plenty of boxing stuff to talk about.
So we've got big boxing news to talk about, and I'm not talking about the folks from last week either. Should I reveal the big news now, or should I wait till time gets on?
Go ahead, spill it now.
I think I'm going to, no, then I'm going to say it again when time gets on. Pacquiao, Bradley, Tornado.
You're going?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. It was, I got a couple friends of mine, guys that I went to college with. And Rich, if you would have boxed me at the Lock Haven Home Show that one year, because your name was one of the ones that was discussed, they would have booed you mercilessly, like they booed Michael Jordan mercilessly. but it's we lived at 414 West Church Street. That night, I walked into the ring wearing a 414 shirt. And they all wore the 414 shirts. They all had signs. This is when Stone Cold Steve Austin was with Hot. It said, Tony 414 instead of Austin 315. And they decided to have the 2014 reunion in Las Vegas. And they invited me to go. And I wasn't sure because it's only about 3 weeks after I come back from Florida. And I'm like, yeah, it's only 2 days I'm missing work for Vegas. It's only 2 days I'm missing work for Florida. It's not really that big of a deal. But I just thought it was kind of funny. I've only been there 6 months. They kept bugging me and bugging me and bugging me. And then they're like, yeah, you know the Pacquiao Bradley fight there that weekend? It was literally right across the street from where we're staying. And I felt my defense was getting weak. Then the guy emailed me back and goes, we're going for tickets. I said, fuck it, let's do it. Now, got another one for you. I'm going to throw a few hints out here, and you tell me if you would be interested in having this guy on for an interview. Former professional boxer.
Yeah.
You say yes, okay. Fought for a world title. Did not win it, but he fought for a world title.
That's good.
Okay. Was also the victor in the 1998 fight of the year.
Okay.
Sound good so far?
Yep.
I was talking to a friend of mine online today, and he and his buddy was chiming in through Facebook, and it's Ivan Robinson, who has two wins over Hall of Famer, the late great Arturo Gatti. So if I can get Ivan Robinson to say yes, would that be interesting to you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Put a message in now.
catch the Friday Night Fight Spot broadcast last week?
It's funny, I did. And right before the main event started, my TV went. And we were watching the TV, and Vinny was on the couch, so the TV went off. So I was like, oh, is Vinny still on the couch, still on the remote? And then it turned back on. I said, oh, shit, this is some poltergeist shit going on here. And then it was going off. I said, oh, Christ. So, you know, we just shut the thing down completely. And we're like, okay, I guess TV's out. And we weren't that big in the main event anyway. It was Thomas Lean Jr. and it was Cornelius White, I believe his name is. And okay, White had been knocked out by Sergey Kovalev, pretty much destroyed. And you know, more of a club fighter than anything. And didn't know much about Thomas Lean Jr. And I was like, I'm not fighting for TV right now. I go up and I'm sitting on my computer, and all I see is, "What's your possible fight of the year? That's unbelievable! Round of the year!" And I said, "Oh shit." And I was like, I better go find another TV and check this out. So we did. I went on another TV, and it was three knockdowns in like 2 minutes. You know, William knocked White down. White got up, and he, when he hit William, he threw his hands up in the air, because the way William went down, that fight looked over. And sometimes you'll run into something where, and the one I always remember was when Tommy Morrison caught Ruiz and Ruddick. Tommy was kind of desperate. He was hurt. He's backing up, and Ruddick came in wide open, and Tommy hit him with a counter left hook, and Ruddick's arm went straight up in the air, and his whole body collapsed, and you can literally see in his eyes, he was out cold, he was unconscious, and the hitting of the ground revived him, because he got up. Same thing with Thomas Williams, and he got up, and White jumped on, and next thing you know, Williams hits White, White goes down, he gets up, he's all over the place, fight stops, like 2 minutes. A very action-packed 2 minutes.
Right. Well, so what other fights do we have over the weekend?
Well, we had dueling cards on Saturday night, so I was watching both of them. And I didn't fall asleep this week, so I know you're already impressed with me. One card, Showtime actually did a card on Show Extreme with a couple of young up-and-coming fighters. And then a two-fight card on the main Showtime. And then HBO also had a card on that worked out pretty well. So, we'll go to the Showtime card first. And I'm going to start right with the main card. And that was a friend of mine, Dave Rosato, coming off a couple, you know, disappointing performances, going up against the undefeated Jermell Charlo. And now was the question of, Charlo looked really good. When he fought another friend of mine, Harry Yorgi, last year, he really impressively beat Harry, stopped him in, I think, the eighth round. Now, Dave Rosato is a little bit more physical than Harry, hits a little bit harder, and, you know, he might, and as much as I like Harry, I think Dave is just a step a little bit higher. And, you know, Dave's been in there for world titles. He's moving down from 160. So looking maybe his strength could possibly be an advantage. We didn't know much about Charlo, but when I left, I was very impressed. I was impressed with his level of skills. Dave fought hard, you know, but Charlo, footwork reminded me a little bit of a young Ray Leonard. Ray Leonard, when he was in his prime, and I was watching the fight with Wilfredo Benitez, Ray was always on point, on balance. He was never off-center, and because of how well-schooled he was. And that's what it reminded me. No matter what Dave did, and Dave fought his ass off, Charlo was just one step ahead of him the whole fight. Now, in the mid-round, there was a cut involved. Dave has a very tender left eye now, and people were saying that could be from the fight he lost in, and then he had the fight again where it got split open, his last fight against Peter Killen just about 3 months ago, and I don't know if it was fully healed. I can say that honestly. But I remember a fight, one of the first fights I covered for Fight News Unlimited, down at the National Guard Armory. And it was, I think it was his first loss. And he got cut. So he had damage to his eyes in that fight. I don't know if they were cut, but he was definitely damaged. So, unfortunately, he's in the skin now. That was a bad cut. And I give the cut man a lot of credit for getting it stopped. So Jermell Charlo won, you know, convincingly, you know, almost every round in that fight. I think one judge had it 90, 100 to 90. Another judge had it 99, 91. Another judge had it 97, 93. But Charlo looks to be the real deal. And so, yeah, and they even said that with Gates, it's come over time. It's like, he's not winning fights right now, and he's fighting so hard and so competitive, but he's not winning. Now the question is, does he become like an Arturo Gatti, who can weather 3 or 4 straight losses and come back and still be, you know, extremely popular? I don't know. You know, he's getting up there, you know, Gates is not as young as he was. Now, Charlo is a young kid. He's 24 years old, 5'11", 23-0, 11 knockouts. And he is an impressive young fighter. Gabe, you know, now he calls it 21-7. And that's not a reflection on how good he is. Well, actually, 21-8 now. And that's not a reflection on how good he really is. And that's a change. And he is now, looking at here, he's 28 years old, but he looks like he's a lot older than 28. Did you figure I started covering him 7 years ago?
Right.
And let's go to the main event here was Lamont Peterson, putting on a very good performance. Unanimous decision over an undefeated fighter. Let me pull up the logistics on that fight. And then I want to get on to a very entertaining HBO card. And I also want to give a couple shout-outs to some local fighters that won some fights on some non-televised shows. One of our former guests, actually, was one of them. Lamont Peterson coming off of that loss last May to Lucas Matisse, fought undefeated Yari Jean, IBF welterweight title, and Peterson looked good. You know, no complaints at all. He went out there and he pretty much battered Jean the whole fight. It was a little bit closer than I thought it was, to be totally honest. John came in 25-0. He's now 25-1. Peterson ups his record to 32-2, one draw, 16 knockouts. And like I said, he looked pretty good in doing it. I was impressed by him. Let's take a look at the HBO doubleheader now. First of all, we had a Philadelphia boy, Brian Bye Bye Jennings, the possibly the new prop of heavyweights, U.S. heavyweights, and a lot of people say that he might be the best U.S. heavyweight out there. You know, Brian's not a big guy, not huge, 6'2", 225 pounds. You know, for 15, 20 years ago, yeah, that was considered, well, about 20 years ago, it's when the Lewis's and the Bows were starting to come in, and four members were pretty relevant at the time. We'll say about 30 or so years ago, he would have been, you know, a big heavyweight. Now he's considered undersized, but he is on a 4-fight stoppage streak. You know, he's 18-0, 10 knockouts. He figures a 4-fight stoppage streak, and that's starting. He's starting to really sit down on his punches. He was fighting a tough guy by the name of Artur Spica, coming off that 2 impressive wins over Mike Marlow, but at the same time, showed how vulnerable he was in those fights with Mike Marlow. He was really just a winging, rolling, rolling, brawl, and just swing, and, you know, just put everything into him. Just a gutter yard street fight, where Jennings wasn't getting into that. Jennings put him down, it was close early, and Jennings finally dropped him in the 6th with a body shot, and then he finished him pretty impressively in the 10th round with a matter of about 30 seconds to go. Good performance by Brian Jennings. And then in the main event, another good, young champion fighter out there by the name of Mikey Garcia. And Mikey took on very tough, very talented Juan Carlos Burgos. Mikey came in there 33-0, 28 knockouts. He went the distance, but he got 34-0, 28 knockouts. won pretty much every round over a very talented Juan Carlos Burgos, who was 31-2 coming into the fight. So Mikey Garcia is the real deal. Also on the card, young Philadelphia fighter Jesse Hardwork Hart kept his undefeated record going, and I'm going to try to get him on the show. We also had the two local cards. I just want to throw a quick shout out to former guest of ours, Joey Duoco, went to Atlantic City as an underdog and won a split decision over Derek Rossi. A lot of people were expecting that Joey Duoco, he's a big, thick, what do they call him, like the Polish Hammer or something like that, the Polish Thunder, and just a big, brawny guy. You know, I don't think he's any taller than me, to be honest. And he was just really thick through the chest and the shoulders. And, you know, I even said it last week. He's going to have to really get in there on close on Rossi, who had a significant height and reach advantage, and just try to wear him down. And he's good enough to get that split decision. And then up at the Sands Casino in Bethlehem, Travis Thompson, Travis Kaufman, son of Marshall Kaufman, who the promoter that Tom and I have been in a couple of his fights. And he, once again, fought another highly touted fighter. We talked to Travis a few weeks ago, and he took on, he went in there 27-1, 20 knockouts, taking on Vincent Thompson, who was 13-1. And Travis beat him, unanimous decision, won all the rounds on two of the cards. And my good friend Bernard Bruni had gave Thompson two of the rounds. Well, once again, another good performance. I wish I could have been there. I would love to have seen Bernard. He refereed even a couple of my fights at Penn State, and he's an all-around good guy. And one of the most young, entertaining fighters out there today, Talib Whitmore, trained by Bernard Hopkins trainer Nazim Richardson. Funny, charismatic guy, and he ran his undefeated record to 5-0 with a second-round knockout over Antonio Lyles, who falls to 1-5. And that's it for boxing next weekend for the main card. There was a big fight over in Poland. Marco Huck, maybe defending his title. I'm just trying to find it real quick. Yep, Marco Huck with a six-round stoppage of a Firat Arslan, who was 33-6 coming in, and that was the WBO Cruiserweight title. Huck put him down twice, and first time they fought, he was a very close decision. Two of the judges only had Huck win him by 2 points, and this time he left no doubt in the mind and took Arslan out. And that's it for boxing for last weekend. How'd I do?
Very good.
I'm the best.
This time you've been going solo on the show for a long time. I think that's what made for it. It's good stuff. Anyway, we've got a lot of upcoming cards here, too, and I just accidentally kind of stumbled across this one. West Virginia, it's the same place our boy there I interviewed tonight at 8:30 is going to be fighting next. We have a fight card tomorrow night that wouldn't be possible without the Carpensis. I'm familiar with Tommy Carpensi. He dates way back to...
Well, Tommy Carpensi actually beat Chuck Versace a couple years ago.
Right. And he's been one of those guys who's always been around. I remember when I interviewed Rayco Saunders, he talked about how tough this kid was. And now he's getting his rematch with him, Rayco. It's not even the main event either. Apparently, the Carpensi family has more than just one boxer, because the main event is heavyweight Jeremiah Carpensi, who's 9-0 with 4 knockouts. He's fighting Ruben Williams, who's 29-22, with 16 knockouts and 1 draw. Then you have a 6-round heavyweight fight between Daniel Martz, who's 9-1-1, and Dante Craig, who's 20-18, with 15 knockouts.
Dante Craig was a former Olympian, and he just never really turned out as a pro.
And then we have Tommy Carpensi, as I said. He's 21-4-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Rayco Saunders. He's 21-2 with 10 knockouts. Seems to most fighters who face him, that record can be very exceeding. And then we have in the first fight of the night, it's a four-round light middleweight battle between Dan Carpensi, who's 1-0, and Greg Thomas, who's 0-1. So the whole fam family is a loss. That's pretty impressive. So that's not the only action going on this week. We also have a very big card in Brooklyn tomorrow night. Actually, tonight. Going on right now, probably. And it's Victor Ortiz versus Luis Collazo in the main event there. So hopefully our fans are watching that instead of listening to us. But
I wouldn't be surprised to see Luis win that
fight. What was that, Tony?
Not only would I not be surprised to see Luis win that fight, I wouldn't be surprised to see Luis stop him in that fight.
Yeah.
You wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Well, in the co-main event, we've got light middleweight Eddie Gomez, 15-0, and Daquan Arnett is 11-0. Somebody's always got to go there. Daquan had 7 knockouts, Gomez had 10. By the way, Luis Collazo is 34-5 with 17 knockouts, and Victor Ortiz is 24-2 with 22 knockouts, and that is our title. The WBA International Welterweight title. Man. Not much else on this card except for the one fight I think was just a recent addition. We've got 8-round super featherweight fight between Gary Russell Jr., 23-0 with 13 knockouts, and Miguel Amayo is 15-7 with 2 draws and 13 knockouts. Let's see what else we got there. We got a fight over in Chester, Pennsylvania tomorrow. Anthony Ferrante versus Anthony Smith. I'm sure you've heard of those guys, Tony.
I don't know Anthony Ferrante very well. I know of him. He recovered a couple of his fights, and he had some real bad. He's had some real bad blows with a lot of guys I know. And Chuck Picasso, Chuck beat him. They had some bad blood going into that fight, but I know he had some real bad blood with. Actually, the first guest I ever booked, Simon One Punch Carr, who 2 minutes into our interview, all I said was, you know, Simon, I see you had some words last week at a play park with Ferrante, and Simon said he's going off. And they finally fought. It was a pretty close and somewhat controversial decision. So let me see who's on this card. I'm like, unfortunately, I got Ben's birthday tomorrow night, so I will not be attending. While I've not been playing the fight, I will be playing the party, I gotta tell you. Ferrante is 12-4 with 7 knockouts. So let's see what happened in his last few fights. He actually on a, he had a loss to Gafir Nosir-Smith back in May of 2012, unanimous decision. He had a loss to Omar Sheikha. Back in February 2012, which was a unanimous decision. His big loss came back in January, actually just a little over 3 years ago. So he got by the name of Ronson Frank, and the knockout was pretty scary. Now, his last fight, which was a year ago, he's not been in the ring in a year, International Boxing Organization Intercontinental Cruiserweight title, and he fought a guy by the name of Issam Akhtar Bayaz, and he cut him out, and he stopped him. But then he failed the drug test. So that really, really halted his career. He hasn't been in the ring since. Now, Anthony Smith, let me take a look at him. Anthony Smith is 14-2. Both losses have come by stoppage. And he has 10 knockouts. He has a win over the aforementioned Zephyr Smith just a little less than a year ago. But he ran a fight in the, October. He was stopped in three rounds by undefeated Sean Monahan. Also has a stop at the wall through the table about a year and a half ago. So he looks to be a fighter that's either going to take you out or he's going to go out. I'm thinking of a few other guys to fight. Yeah, he just doesn't seem like he gets to go a lot of rounds. So that's going to be fight. And knowing what I've seen of Tony Ferrante, that's going to be what you're going to They're going to come at it pretty hard. And it's going to be like a last man standing type deal. Who else we got on this card? Kevin Farmer, a pretty decent young up-and-coming fighter. I've covered a couple of his fights. I always call him a poor man's Adrian Broner because sometimes he wears, one time he had to wear sunglasses. He put the sequins were that bright in his outfit. Kevin is fighting Noel Ekavaracha. And let me just see what their records are going in this fight. And I think I see why they're putting this together. Kevin is 14-4. He had three knockouts. But he's on a pretty decent win streak. He's got a 7-fight win streak. And he's really been improving everyone. He won his last fight there, so he really impressed me. And that's when he stopped at this particular Vasquez. He's had three fights since that. All wins. Now, the fighter he's going up against is 11-1 with six knockouts. That's a nice little test for Kevin Farmer, which I think if he wins and the fighter I'm about to mention wins, it's going to lead to an all lightweight Philadelphia showdown, which is what I'd really like to see. Fighter by the name of Naeem Nadeem Nelson. Not a big puncher. He's 10-0 with one knockout. But I know Naeem is managed by Dave Price. And Naeem was supposed to play at one card I went to a few months ago, and he had broken his hand. So he got pulled off the card. You know, he had his hand in his pants, actually. And I was talking to him. Very nice young man. But he was in the ring, and the crowd was acknowledging him because he was going to fight the main event that night. And he had gotten postponed into the injury. And Kevin Farmer got in the ring and challenged him. And said, Philadelphia, don't we want to see an all-Philadelphia fight like this? And everybody cheered for it. So that would be one of these guys win, I think we're going to see down the road. That's the Kevin 10-0, one knockout. Christian Steele, his opponent, 4-7, also one knockout. So I think this is a fight where we're going to try to get Naeem Nelson back in the ring, get him from work again, and let him get ready to play with Kevin Farmer. And really, the rest of the card don't really know anybody else on there. Friday night fights tomorrow night. We got Edwin Mariki and Blake Paparero. Let's just look at their records real quick. Mariki's been around a long time now. He is 34 years old. He's 40 wins, 5 losses, 24 knockouts. Like I said, I remember him when he was still starting with Teddy Atlas back in 1998. Amazing as that is. And he's been around and... You know, winning most, losing a few, but he's always going to give you a good fight. He's got a, this is a 5-point win streak. And his opponent, I can honestly say I do not know much about, but let's take a look at him. And that is Jake Paparello. And he is undefeated. 18-0 with 6 knockouts. He has 1 draw in there. And his last fight was a win over Alan Green. And so that's, Alan Green was pretty decent. Obviously he's on, he's seen better days. Paparello has a knockout over the aforementioned Dante Craig. He has a win over Iron Fire Jr. So he looks to be a decent prospect. So I think the test of Mariki is going to be a real nice little step up for him. I am pretty awesome,
ain't I? We got another fight on that card too, Dusty Hernandez-Harrison versus Tim Witherspoon Jr.
Yep.
Dallas Witherspoon Jr. 10-3 at home with two knockouts. And we got Super Bantamweights on the card. Jorge Diaz, 17-2 with 10 knockouts versus Luis Rosa, who's undefeated with 15 wins, 7 losses. I mean, 7 knockouts. I mean, I could be undefeated with 7 losses. But there's actually a dozen fights on this card from New Jersey there, West Orange, New Jersey. So that should be a pretty good night for fans there. We got a big female title fight going on Saturday. Cecilia Brecuš, 23-0 with 7 knockouts. We'll be fighting Miriam Lamar, who's 22-3 with 10 knockouts. And it's for the WBA, WBC, and WBO. Landscape. But any minute now, we're going to have our guest on the show. I'm just seeing if there's anything else on Saturday here we should mention. For boxing, I'm sure there's got to be something big that I missed. Just paging through. Gennady Golovkin is fighting this weekend in Monte Carlo, Monaco. Fighting Osumanu Adama, who's 22-3 on Saturday night. He's 28-0 with 25 knockouts. That's for the IBO middleweight title and WBA world middleweight title. Also the vacant WBA continental welterweight title. It's on the line between Roman Belayev and Dean Byrne. Belayev is 12-0 with 10 knockouts. Byrne is 17-2-1 with 6 knockouts. Pretty big United Kingdom card on Saturday, put out by Eddie Hearn, headlined by Gavin Reese versus Gary Buckland. It's not for any title, but it's a pretty big lightweight fight. Reese is 37-3-1 with 18 knockouts. Buckland is 27-3 with 9 knockouts. Chris Jenkins is also on this card, fighting Christopher Sabayer at light welterweight. Jenkins is 12-0 with 5 knockouts. Sabayer is 22-6 with 8 knockouts. And that is for the vacant WBC International Light Welterweight title. We also have on that card Lee Selby taking on Rendell Monroe. Selby is 17-1 with 6 knockouts. Monroe is 27-3-1 with 11 knockouts. And that's a featherweight fight for the EBU featherweight title and BBB of C British featherweight title. And here, I think, is your mismatch of the week. Big time. We got Jason Cook, 29-5-1, with 15 knockouts, facing Tony Pace, who's 4-6 with one draw. It's a tough match.
He's a knockout too, huh?
Anthony Joshua, from the Olympics fame, is also on this card. He's 3-0 facing Dorian Darch, who's 7-2 at heavyweight there. And that looks like about it, but it could be more. Still looking. We got not Julio Cesar Chavez, but Cesar Chavez fighting this weekend for Canada, fighting Antonin Dicari, who's 28-2 with 8 knockouts. Caesar is 21-5 with 9 knockouts. Also on that card, Ghislaine Maduma, 15-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Giancarlo Aparicio, who's 26-7 with 21 knockouts.
That is for the NADF lightweight title. That's next Wednesday, so we're definitely getting to the end here. That's pretty much it. Until next week. So, let's get our guest on here. Ronda Rousey, turns out, is a huge boxing fan. Says outside of UFC, that's the one thing that she likes to watch, is boxing. So, this is big news. And apparently she actually was filming a movie with Victor Ortiz, too, so... She was thrilled about that opportunity to meet him. But she says, I already adore boxing. It's my favorite sport to watch outside of the UFC. You can definitely get a better appreciation of the game when you train with top guys and work alongside them. I feel like I know boxing better than they know MMA. And that was on the Expendables 3 movie that she worked with, boxer Victor Ortiz. Tonight. Let's get Jean-Pierre Augustine on the call. He's probably waiting for us.
Jean-Pierre?
This is Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
It's what?
This is Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hi.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wasn't able to hear you. I'm not sure if it's my line or your end. That's a little choppy.
All right. Let me try calling you right back.
Okay.
Sometimes that clears it up.
Yeah, Rich, I'm not hearing you too great tonight either.
Uh-oh. Is that any better?
Hello?
Hello.
Okay. Yes, I can hear you better now.
All right. Well, we've kind of given an introduction into your background. You're a Boston guy like me. I grew up in Dorchester.
Okay.
Right next to Boston.
And actually, it says Palmdale at the moment. Are you in L.A.?
No, it's a Skype phone, so that's where the,
oh, okay,
the satellite beams from, I guess, over California.
Oh, okay, okay.
So, yeah, I'm in New Hampshire right now.
Oh, that's weird. So am I. I'm in Manchester at the moment.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Manch Vegas, they call it up to this neck of the woods.
You definitely Manch Vegas.
So
what part? What's that?
Give us a little background of how you get into the fight game.
Okay, well, originally I started with martial arts. I did that for about, 4 or 5 years. And, it wasn't as physical as I thought it was going to be, the way the activity was, during competition, as soon as you strike and you land a point, you stop and then, you get back into it after, a few seconds. So I was looking for something a little more physical and challenging because I picked up the martial arts a little easier than I thought it would be. So when I got into boxing, I noticed that it was a much bigger challenge, and it definitely didn't come as easy to me as martial arts did. So the challenge in that aspect, you know, got me as interested as I got into it. And, you know, I started progressing and, you know, doing what I do.
And you have some connections to Haiti?
Yes, that's where my parents originated from. Both my mother and father were born in Haiti. So when it came down to, you know, thinking about the 2012 Olympics, I opted to represent Haiti during the Pan American qualifiers and their Olympic trials process.
Cool. Yeah, I actually did one of my biggest magazine stories about Haiti for a magazine called St. Anthony Messenger. And
okay.
It was about a group of nuns and some missionary people up here in New Hampshire who used to put together truckloads of, or actually cargo container loads full of goods for down there in Haiti.
Right.
It was a really, really good story. I mean, these people have gone down there and seen how bad it is down there.
Right. I mean, it's definitely what is portrayed on TV a lot of times. You know, they'll show, you know, certain countries and people will be like, oh, you know, that's not exactly how the country is. But with Haiti, it's more of like a, what you see is what you get, you know?
So have you been back at all? Have you been down there?
Yes. I've actually, in the past year, probably been there twice. But in general, I've probably been to Haiti about 15, 20 times, you know, in the past the past 3 years. So I'm there quite often.
Mm-hmm. And what is their boxing history like? Who are their boxing heroes over the years that you could think of?
The guys that I looked up to, since I'm a southpaw, was an early Bab Judah, Pernell Whitaker. You know, I did follow and still do follow Andre Durell. Those are the guys whose style that I like and I try to, you know, emulate, because I, you know, I definitely see a lot of myself in them, in the way that they form their combinations and they box and, you know, use their jabs, you know?
Right. And what do you know about this upcoming fight you've got on February 8th, next week, right?
Well, you know, it's definitely a long time coming. I've had several bouts fall through this past year to the point where I'm just, at one point, I just thought about giving up the whole thing, because, you know, I thought pro boxing was just going to be a straight shot where I'd get to fight all the time and be able to be as active as I wanted. But with all the bouts that I've had to fall through, when I got to the February 8th bout, when I signed the contract and, you know, got all my physicals and all my paperwork done, you know, I finally knew that this time for sure I'm actually going to get it done. So right now it's more of an anxiousness and excitement to get in the ring and finally do, you know, what it is that I love to do and what I've been wanting to do for a while now.
Do you have any idea who you're fighting yet?
Yes, his name's Michael Davis. He's out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
All right. And does he have any fights yet, or is it his pro debut too?
I believe he's had about 19 fights, from what I've been told. I didn't really want to look into his record or any of that, because, you know, it's all a mind game. I just want to go in there and, you know, follow the game plan that me and my coaches have put together and not worry about what exactly his record is.
All right. Well, you won 2 Massachusetts Golden Gloves tournaments, right? And
correct.
What was the amateur situation like there for you in New England?
It was good. When I first started fighting my first year, it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. I think I lost my first bout, and, you know, I won the next few, and then I would lose one here and there. And I ended up ending my amateur career at 49-9, you know, having success, you know, in the midst of, you know, the latter of my career. You know, started taking my training more serious, started watching tapes of other fighters and what they did and how they trained, and, you know, from that I was able to adapt and mesh things into my style and training regimen to bring me to the level that I wanted to get at.
All right.
alone, I mean, a record like that in amateurs is very impressive because, you know, in amateurs it's not like you sign a pro deal and you get a good management team and they build you up real slow. It's like
I can't hear what you're saying. I think your phone's cutting off a little bit.
Can you hear me at all now?
Yes, I can hear you better now.
Okay, I was saying, having a record like that in the amateurs is pretty impressive because you get a pro deal sometimes and you'll see guys that are 10, 12, 14, and 0 or whatever, or have a high record, and then they fought all guys that are, I remember going to play one time, the guy was 35 and 0, and I was covering the card, and the guy said, aren't you going to watch this fight and write on it? And in heavyweight, and the guy that was brought in was 6'10", I think. And
wow.
I knew he was not a skilled fighter just from seeing him, looking at his record,
right,
and seeing where he was from. I said, I don't need to cover this fight. And I showed the guy what I already wrote in my paper, and there was one word. It was timber. And I'm talking, and all you're with, boom, thud, 7, 8, 9, 10. I said, told you. But to get that amateurs, you go to tournaments, you play in Golden Globe tournaments, you might draw the top seed guy early. And if you don't beat him, you're already out.
Exactly. You know? In the amateurs, you really have no say in what happens. It's all, you know, the luck of the draw. You know, when I started fighting internationally, just hearing, you know, the stories of, you know, the Cubans and, you know, the Russians and all types of, you know, guys in their background, immediately going into it, I just wish that I wasn't in, you know, this person's bracket or, you know, at least got a chance to fight some other people. But in the amateurs, you really do not pick and choose who you fight, unlike the pros.
Yeah. All right, so what's your ultimate goal with boxing?
Excuse me?
What's your ultimate goal with boxing?
My ultimate goal is to win a world championship. I mean, it might sound cliche, but nobody wakes up in the morning to be average, you know? So I've invested this amount of time into the game. It's definitely in pursuit of becoming a world champion.
Yeah, I guess when you're average, you don't... You don't get on radio shows like this. You never interviewed anybody who was like 11 and 176 or something. So
right.
We don't know what their goal is.
Right. And I definitely appreciate you guys taking the time to speak with me as well.
Oh, yeah, always. We like to highlight, especially New England guys. I actually tried boxing, tried to make a comeback to amateur boxing back in 2008. And,
right.
I ran into a guy you might have heard of down there named Sean Betancourt.
Okay.
Your weight class. But
right.
A little lighter. And he cracked my rib in a
oh, wow.
Ring section. Broke it, actually.
Yeah.
So it sidelined me for a few weeks, and then I just kind of fell off after that. Moved out of state.
Right.
But I was down in Brockton then, Brockton, Massachusetts, which is a big hub for boxing still today.
Okay.
And, yeah, I used to... Bar down there at the Goody Petronelli's gym.
Okay.
For a little while.
Now, were you, did you get into the open division or did you just go novice?
I didn't even compete. I mean, the last time I competed officially was back in college in 1998. So I just wanted to see if I still had.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You know who whipped Rich's butt? It was Michael Jordan.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Michael Jordan whipped Rich's butt.
Yeah, he was from West Point, though, not the basketball player.
When we first saw him, because Rich and I were in the same weight class, we were within two fights to fight each other for the national title.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, what's funny was because... That, and I'm going up to my alma mater, Lock Haven, this week, this coming Monday, to serve as a guest coach. Well, when we have our annual show, that's a big deal for us. At least back in the day it was. I mean, some of the fighters, we'd walk all through the town, we'd post flyers, we would do radio spots, we would do whatever we could to help promote the show. And I remember that year, my senior year was the last time I was going to fight there. And I remember that Monday, I had just come off a win at Penn State. And they had a list of guys that were potential opponents. They were figuring who they were going to match me with. And two of the names were, there was a kid from Navy by the name of A.J. Washington. There was this kid, Michael Jordan from West Point, who actually was called Mike Jordan, but I'll get to this in a minute. And then Rich. So that's how I knew Rich's name. Now, they end up selecting, I'm going to fight this guy, Mike Jordan. And we get to the day of the show, we're at the weigh-in, you know, I weigh in, and a little bit later, I'm talking to the one coach's son who was serving as the ring announcer, and he looks at the paperwork of, like, because he wanted to make sure he could pronounce everybody's name right, and he looks, Mike Jordan, and he looks up and looks at this guy, who was about 6'2", he was black, and he was shaved head, and he resembled the Michael Jordan. He goes,
oh wow.
And his name is Mike tonight. He's Michael. And that's the name of Michael Jordan. And you can even see his face. Like, when he got the announced, he was kind of like grimacing, like, oh, come on. But then when we got to Nationals that year, there was eight of us, and I had lost a very controversial decision in the regionals. And a fighter Rich and I both have history with, who had about eight arms because he would grab you with seven and a half of them. And he wouldn't let go of you. And I was fighting in his home gym, and I even put him down in the third round. I had him beat up pretty good. He gets a one-point split decision, so he gets in the higher bracket, which was kind of bullshit as it was. Now, I'm fighting in the Nationals kind of in the lower bracket. And I remember going into that tournament, and I'm saying, okay, we got seven guys in this tournament, and I've either fought or scouted five of them.
Right.
Two guys I have not fought or scouted. Rich, and of course the guy that I drew in the first round, who was 185 pounds, and he was 6'6" or 6'7".
Wow.
He was a foot of weight on me, and he ended up, I had no scouting on him now. If I might have caught him on the third day of the tournament, I may have been a little bit more prepared. But for a guy that tall with that long arms, he fought very aggressively, and I wasn't ready for that. He was coming straight at me, and then I was just totally unprepared. And then he went on, he beat me in the first round, unanimous decision. Then he beat the human octopus in the second round, unanimous decision. Then he went on, and after Michael Jordan had beaten Rich, he stopped Jordan. I think it was up. I had my book, my scrapbook in my room. I think he stopped him.
Seconds.
It was the first round, but I think it was the third.
Okay.
For it being like 30 seconds.
Yeah, no, it was the third round, Rich. I'm telling you right now. I'll bet you on that one.
I was like, telling it better that way because, you know, I always remember that it was one of the first years they put the finals on ESPN. And so
I refuse to watch it.
I was like thinking to myself, oh geez, you know, it's a good thing because I don't want to get knocked out in 30 seconds on ESPN. I don't want to have that on my rap sheet, you know.
Right.
Well, you know, it would have been my theory on the top. Because I'm a little bit more of just throw caution to the wind kind of guy. My one coach always said, he goes, yeah, you're a Philadelphia fighter. I was a Philadelphia kid. And I'd be fighting in Lock Haven. He goes, you're a quintessential Philadelphia. You just throw everything out there, and if you win, you win. If not, it's entertaining. And I remember I was going to the casino a few months ago because they were having refunds on whatever you lost. And I remember a cousin of mine saying, oh, that's a scam. They don't pay you back. They just do it to scam. They give you money if you go back later to play their slots again. I thought that sounded pretty good anyway, but I said, you know what? Then hell with it. I'll just go out and win. And I did. I won $500 that night. But my
thing
was like, okay, I'm against the wall here, and everybody's picking me to get killed. All right, let me go out there and just let me just not go out there and to not lose. Let me just go out there to win. And if I die trying, I die fine.
Right. That's definitely a Philly fighter right there.
That's why I'm going back up to Lock Haven on Monday to serve as a guest coach. Because our head coach, he was still coaching when I was there, and he was still, you know, really pushing me really hard. Then as he got really older and his health started to deteriorate, he wasn't as into it as he was. Because, I mean, when I was up there, it was the day of that show, you were literally like a caged animal. You know, I mean, you were just so lame. You were out there in front of your family, your friends, your classmates. You didn't want to lose. If you went to class on Monday and you got your ass kicked, you're sitting next to all the people that saw you get your ass kicked, and that was hell of a motivation. And
right.
When I went there back, I think it was 08 or 09, it was the 09 show, and these two guys, they were fighting the semi-main event, and then the guy that was fighting the main event, the headline of the show. They got their gloves on, they got their robe on and everything. They're slap-boxing each other and laughing and jumping around like buffoons. And I looked at them, and they both lost. And I just remember saying to myself, I said, and I could not imagine that happening when I was there. And,
right.
And I remember calling the coach, and I said, next year, you mind if I come up as a guest coach for a day? Because we would love to have you bring some of your attitude back to that team. I said, okay.
Right.
So I got to the one, and they had a much smaller and a very young squad. My luck is that when I was a freshman, we had three or four seniors that were All-Americans that really took some of their ways. Now you have
right.
the guys that, you know, these were all young guys coming up together and nobody knew how to lead. So
right.
I went up there and we had one young kid, 135 pounds or 140 pounds, there, and he's hitting the bag, you know, just slapping it, you know, playing around. And then after 15, 20 seconds, he would stop. He'd walk circles. And he would, like, lean up against the corner and this and that. And then he'd hit another 20, 30 seconds. And I'm looking at him out of the corner of my eye. And finally, I couldn't take it no more. I said, young man, come here. I said, I know you don't know who I am, and you probably don't care. I said, but 10 years ago, I meant something in this town. On this gym, I dropped a lot of blood, a lot of sweat, a lot of tears in here. And I got a lot of pride. And put that uniform on that outfit, because Lockhaven across the front had a lot of pride to me. And it should have some pride to you, too. If not the Lockhaven part of it, at least yourself. Have some pride in yourself. I said, you're in my gym today. This is now my gym today. You will give me 3 minutes. And when I leave, I hope you remember what I say. And you probably have more than walk out of here. You may go fuck that ass, so I'll do what I want. But I hope you remember that I'm here today, and for today only, you will give me 3 minutes. And he kind of gave me this look. I pushed him to the limit that day. And he went back to his bad habits, and when I went up there 2 weeks later for their show, not only did he lose, he quit. He quit in front of his family, his friends, his classmates, everybody. I wouldn't be able to go to class on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you get stopped, but to quit, you know, that's the word I'm scared of, quit.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's like an oof. That word gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, and I could just tell him by talking to you, that, I mean, that story probably, you probably wouldn't care that kid's head off if you saw him.
Right, like, I mean, I just, certain people, I guess, are just cut from a different cloth, you know, because whatever you do, you know, take pride in what you do, you know, give it your everything, or just don't do it at all. Don't attempt it at all, you know?
Yep. And I said this a couple of years ago, I was at a job, and they were trying to figure out what is important things to bring to your job. And a lot of people hate their jobs, and I was at a job for a long time that I hated. And this other job I enjoyed, and I liked them, I liked the people there. And we were trying to figure out a team, what was our values, what do we bring to this company? And I said passion. And people were like, well, I don't agree with that. Why is that important? You know, you just can't do a job. And I actually stood up, and I got passionate in the meeting. And I said, listen, I'm here, and if I don't want to be here, then why am I here? I'm going to go somewhere else for a job. If I'm not happy, why am I here? For the paycheck? No. I can get a paycheck somewhere else if I'm happy. And they're thinking, you know, you're right. If we bring that attitude just to our job, how much better can you make our work environment? If you bring that attitude to the gym, how much more can you enjoy your workout? You bring that attitude to the ring, you're aware.
Exactly. I don't care, you know, if it's someone that's only been in the gym for a week or someone who's been in the gym for 10 years. If someone tells me something, hey, you know, I'm doing this wrong or I could do this better, I'm going to listen to it because I'm trying to get myself better. I'm not above anyone. I wouldn't care if I was a world champ or you follow someone that just started, any piece of advice is definitely going to be helpful and beneficial, because if someone sees something, then it's definitely going to help me out in the long run. You know, I'm always asking questions, always willing to learn, you know, trying to pick everyone's brain. Sometimes they say I ask too many questions, but I'd rather ask than think I know it all, because I don't, and I'm far from it.
Now, what's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
The most important thing I feel I should do is watch tape of other fighters that are obviously way ahead of me and try to take, even if it's just a little bit from their performance, and try to put that into mine.
And is there anybody out there that really helped you out along the way, was a real role model for you, either inside or outside the sport?
I mean, basically just all my coaches, anyone who's taken time to, you know, work with me or, you know, come into the gym extra early, whether it was something that I needed to learn, or guys that, you know, helped me out sparring. You know, I can't really put one person's name on it. It's basically everyone who's ever been a helpful hand or, you know, someone to work with me that I would say that about.
Cool. And do you have a favorite punch?
My favorite punch, I would say, is my right hook. I'm a southpaw. And now that I'm actually, you know, learning to check hook and, you know, extend my punches and pivot my hips the way that I should, you know, I'm working that off my jab a lot more than I used to. So that's now becoming my favorite punch, the check hook.
Cool. Yeah, I used to like the left hook. I was a right-hander boxer.
Okay.
You know, same difference.
Right.
I'm from Philadelphia. We only throw left hooks.
Clash of Philly fighters. Now, are you familiar with Eugene Cyclone Hart?
Yes, actually. I mean, he obviously was before my time, but his son is a. In fact, his son and I are Facebook friends, Jesse Hardwork Hart. And Jesse Hart's manager is a guy by the name of Dave Price. And Dave and I go back to about 1995. We used to spar together.
Okay.
And it's funny because whenever I see him now, I always see him at the fight cards when he has some of his fighters on, and Dave's doing real well and one of the nicest, most genuine guys that you will ever meet in your life. And he always tells me when I meet him. He even said this, told the story to my mom. Very same casino I was talking about earlier when I went to the slot play that night. They had fights there from time to time. I took my mom to go play the casino and I was going to fight. And she met Dave and he's talking to her, and all he talked about was the body shots I hit him with. I know Jesse not very well, but yes.
Yeah, I was in training camp with Jesse and Al Mitchell at the Poconos when the Chinese Olympic team came down. I was one of the sparring partners for the Chinese Olympic team. I sparred with Zhang Zhou, the Olympic super heavyweight silver medalist. And Jesse was definitely a character when I was down there. So now that you said, you know, you're from Philadelphia, I was wondering if you had known his dad, who's a great guy as well.
I don't know Eugene Cyclone personally. I've been able to get to Jesse a few times, but I know Jesse's manager very well. He's been a friend of mine for many years now.
Yeah, and he's definitely progressed real well in the pros with all the belts that he's had and, you know, stepping up in competition, you know, on a regular.
Yeah, we were just talking about him before the other day, because he just won last week on the
On the 25th against Derek Finley.
Yeah.
Right. So he's definitely impressive on that belt.
All right. Now, as far as the future here, do you plan on staying at this cruiserweight weight? Are you thinking about going up to heavyweight at some point? What's the plan there?
No, as far as heavyweight goes, that's definitely a weight class I have no interest in whatsoever. 20 years ago, I might have been the perfect height for a heavyweight, but at 6'3 today, I am in no man's land. I'm too small, and the highest I've ever gone in weight is about, you know, 208, 210 pounds. you know, I can be I can make cruiserweight comfortably, and I can make 175. So for the first year, I'll probably fight at cruiserweight, but eventually campaign at light heavyweight.
Oh, wow.
Weight is definitely not an issue for me. I can go down as low as 168 if need be, but I wouldn't want to.
Right. And what do you do as far as you know, conditioning to lose weight and stuff like that? You got any secret workout routines that you do, or anything that you can kind of give us hints that anybody out there is trying to fight could follow?
Well, as far as losing weight, that's actually never been a problem for me, which most fighters probably don't want to hear. It's the gaining weight part that kills me. Losing weight, I can probably lose 10, 15 a week easily, comfortably. I've never had a problem losing it. It's keeping it and gaining or maintaining. That's the hard part.
That's good.
For me.
Yeah, it's like me my senior year in high school when I wrestled, and I only weighed about 165 or so, and I was wrestling 171. Everybody else is cutting weight. I'm just sitting there.
Right. Everyone else, I remember at training camp, we were in Mexico City getting ready for Olympic trials in Brazil, and everyone was struggling to make weight. And originally, I was going to fight at 201, but since this one kid was struggling to make weight, we decided to switch weight classes. So I let him come up, and I moved down to 178. In about, I think, 9 days, I had gone as low as 174. And everyone was just giving me such a hard time because, you know, I made the weight so easy. And they're like, yeah, you know, we're struggling over here to make our weight. You could probably go down to 65. And even though I did entertain it because there were 5 available positions, I just didn't want to go too low too fast where I could have made myself weaker than I needed to be. So the weight cutting process so far hasn't been a bad thing for me.
And I know exactly what you're talking about the too fast, too soon, because that's the one joke we always have on here. Because I still, and I actually verified it a year or so ago, I still own a college record. I'm the only guy stupid enough to have completed 5 different weight classes in the 3-month span.
Wow. How did you pull that off?
I was normally around 180. But that year, I was coming off knee surgery, so I wasn't getting my road work in as much as I wanted. So the weight
right.
was the last so many pounds to get down to 180. They were fighting me. They were going to take a fight at 190. Okay, I fought at 190. You know, I was like, now the next, I was like, going to fight 190 again. I was around 183, 184, and it's starting to come down a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, would you mind taking this heavyweight fight? I'm like, I really didn't want to, but yeah, okay, I'll do it. So I took the heavyweight
right.
fight. And then I took another heavyweight fight. Now I'm down. I'm not putting rocks in my pocket and, you know, drinking water and all that. And I'm really
right.
happy doing it. You guys are so much bigger than me, just as you were saying. And now I'm back to 180. I'm fighting my 180 where I'm supposed to be. Take another fight at 180 where I'm supposed to be. Getting ready for the regionals. And they're like, Monday we trained, and I was literally right on weight. I was right where I had to be if I was fighting 180. And they're like, you know, any chance you can make 165 on Friday? And I said, yeah, I can do it. And I killed myself. I literally killed myself. Made 165.
Wow.
I would be losing in the regional because fighting a guy that I had already beaten, I was so sluggish coming third round. He threw his right hand, and I went down. And I got
right.
him, and I said, you got to be kidding me. That's going to cost me a point, a pick. And then for nationals, I jumped to 172. I went that day. Three months. January 30th up until April 12th.
Wow. The fastest weight
class. That's
crazy.
Yeah, his nickname was the team, Tony.
Man, that fight mentality right there.
That's what, even when I go up and now that I go back up to Lock Haven. And when I was there, you know, during that time, we had a lot of good fighters. We had guys that were multiple-time All-Americans, 3- and 4-time All-Americans. And I was an elite talented guy on the team. But I fought probably harder than anybody because I had that Philadelphia mentality. And
right.
I hadn't had a 500 record. But every fight, I was competitive, and every fight, even if I didn't win, I had the guy hurt, or I had him down, before I was coming on when the final bell rang. And I just won over a lot of fans. And,
right. In the amateurs, I don't really think.
Excuse me?
In the amateurs, I don't really think you know, people should look too much into records because you don't pick and choose. You know.
And like we were saying earlier, it's like sometimes if you get a guy that, like I said, that guy was 35-0, and he was playing all guys that were like 1-10. And
right.
When he finally stepped up and fought somebody somewhat decent, he got knocked out in 2 rounds.
Right.
And I remember when I went up to Joaquin a couple years ago to serve as a guest coach that one time, and the head coach saw him and he goes, "I would love to have you on the team right now." He goes, because first of all, these are all young guys, none of them have any direction. A lot of them just don't know how to work hard. They think their talent can carry them, and it can't. Because I would just want somebody on the team that was like a grinder, somebody that was going to go over there, somebody that was hard-nosed and was tough, that was going to sit there and show them their attitude. And then the assistant coach was even like, we were joking around, it was all alumni the one night, guys older than me, guys younger than me. And he always pushed me, he goes, if I could pick out my favorite guy here, he goes, I'm pointing to Tony. He goes, because every time was, you know, okay, Tony, you're going to fight this weekend. Okay. We need you. And it was basically, what weight do you need me at and what time? And let's
right.
It was never a, who am I fighting? It's what weight?
Right.
And that's
all right.
So,
is
there anybody out there you
want
to give a shout out to, say hello to, or anything like that?
Yes, I definitely wanted to give a shout out to the Currency Shop, who's definitely been a great sponsor for me and aiding me with my travel and as well as my uniform. Also, I want to give a shout out to Smart Choice. They are an up and coming. Vegetable export company. They've also been a great sponsor to me. You know, everyone in the lockdown boxing gym helped me get ready for my upcoming fight. And, I just want to let everyone know to be on the lookout for Shake Creole because this is the year that I debut and hopefully make a mark on the sport.
All right. Got any nickname ideas yet or anything like that?
What was that?
Got any nickname ideas or anything yet?
Yeah, didn't hear the last part.
Do you have any nicknames in mind?
Yes, my name is Kid Creole. That's what I'm known as.
Oh, all right, Kid Creole.
Yes.
It's always a pleasure getting in touch with guys that are on their way up, and sounds like you definitely got the right idea, got the right people behind you, and... I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on you, and we'll have you on the show in the future, I'm sure, when you're a champion down the line, right?
Most definitely, and I would love to be back on.
All right.
Absolutely,
sounds
great.
What was that?
Absolutely, it sounds great.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you?
I said absolutely, we'll get you back on, it sounds great, and thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
You're welcome.
All right, have a good night.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye. So there you have it, the professional debut of Jean-Pierre Augustin. It's going to happen on February 8th in West Virginia. It's all the details I have right now. If you go on BoxRec, he actually does have a profile there, and it says fighting on February 20th. But I'm not sure if that's what we talked about with people pulling out or... what's going on with that? The fight then or not? But right now, his profile is there, but his current fight that he's talking about is not there yet. Sure. If you want to check on him later, it will be there. He's pretty good about that, getting that stuff corrected when the fight happens. Anyway, we have Psychic Tom with us. He's been with us for a few minutes.
Yeah, sounds like I missed a good interview. Just caught the tail end of it, and John sounds like he's got his head on pretty good. So be excited to see how things go for him.
Here's the way.
Yeah.
Former Golden Gloves winner there, so he's definitely got the right background.
Well,
you back?
actually gone the whole first half of the show here without talking one single MMA story. I think that's a record.
Hold on, I gotta give Tom my riddle. See if he gets it. Ready,
okay,
Tom?
Fire away.
Pacquiao. You ready? Pacquiao, Bradley, and the tornado.
Okay, you mean who is the common, what's the common denominator?
Yeah, we're all going to be in Las Vegas on April the 12th.
Ah, okay, buddy. All right.
Yeah.
Have you got your tickets yet?
I haven't got them yet. I have actually people in charge of that right now. I have friends of mine that we were joking around because my house at Lock Haven was 414 West Church Street. And when I fought my senior year fighting, I wore 414 shirts of the ring. All my friends wore their shirts. And now that it's 2014, we're doing a reunion this year out in Vegas. And they all kept saying, you coming? And at first I didn't feel comfortable. So I'm at a new job, and it's only 3 weeks after I'm going down to Florida for a few days. And then they're like, yo, we're getting tickets to the Pacquiao fight. Fuck it, let's go.
I think they know your weak point. They know how to bribe you. Oh, man, that's exciting. We'll have to be calling, okay? We'll get updates. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fight I'd love to get up there for. But I've seen her once fights while I was out there. I tried to get trespasses, but they wouldn't give me any. I wasn't big enough. I went to some good Friday night fights, guys. Anyway, here's a big fight in the making. Mikey Garcia versus Yuri Yamboa, rumored to be in the works for a fifth. Garcia is sitting in the back, yeah. So, we had a good fight to make it happen. This game lower, 23.5 and 15 KOs. Garcia's 34 and 8 KOs. That might be a good fight. Let's see if it's working on. Another fight they're working on, I don't know if you're going to be too happy about it. George Zimmerman is trying to get into celebrity boxing. Looking for an opponent. There you go. You can fight him. You're a celebrity.
Now, who is Zimmerman? Do they have a prospective opponent for Zimmerman?
They don't say. It's his idea, I guess. Damon Feldman, the same guy who always does that. Celebrity boxing. And he says, prior to the incident, I was actually going to the gym for weight loss and doing boxing-type training for weight loss, and a mutual friend put me in contact with Damon and provided me with an opportunity and motivation to get back in shape and continue with my weight loss goals and be able to help a charity out. So I know during the trial we heard some testimony where they said that he sucked at mixed martial arts. It wasn't very good. He's a very good student, but anyway, he says, boxing isn't new to me. It's something I had picked up well before the incident, and it's something that I liked, enjoyed, and I kept up with it, and I was able to lose a tremendous amount of weight and get a healthy lifestyle. So, plus, it's like one-minute rounds or something, or two-minute rounds. Pretty quick rounds and big gloves, so
yeah, I can imagine. That should be interesting. You know, and it's amazing in those 1 to 2 minute rounds how some guys manage to get so out of shape and gas out so quick.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's just, I think
especially
probably
when it's Jose Canseco's brother instead of Jose Canseco.
Yeah, and I think one of the worst examples that I can think of is a guy that was bragging. This is back when Art Dore had, they had Sean O'Grady on that, if you guys remember that, going back to the late 90s. And And they were interviewing this guy who was bragging that he trained on beer and cigarettes, and he was just so above everyone that he didn't need to do anything. So about 30 seconds into the first round, he was done. I mean done. And he's trying to hold on, and his opponent had the sense to give him body shots, and so the guy dropped to his knees, and he was counted out. And then as he was going back to his corner, I remember I must have had a psychic flash because I started yelling at the television, "No, don't do it, don't do it." And all of a sudden he starts like he's ready to throw up, and it was like The Exorcist. I mean, it had to be one of the worst upchucks I'd see. And Lawrence Taylor was the color commentator, and he's out there, oh, no, Lord, hello. But you would see this a lot at that level of fighting, where guys just, for some reason, they just thought it looked easy. And after about a minute, they convinced them that maybe you better find another hobby.
Right. Yeah, it's tougher than it looks, speaking from experience. Anyway, we got a lot of MMA news to cover. We got a pretty big story here with Juliana Pena. She's out of UFC 171 in a match against Jessica Andrade, the winner of the fighter. She was with Ronda Rousey and Beaches. And this is a pretty bad one. Not a minor knee injury, but she was injured grappling and training. It damaged her ACL, MCL, LCL, and meniscus. Next Thursday. But she has been assured, apparently, that me will return to full strength after that. Very interesting, considering, you know, the history of that whole episode where that Zingano was able to be because of her knee injury. Whole season. So that's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Pat Barrett is retiring. Indefinitely. Definitely leaving MMA, according to him. So this is now the third person, big name quality, to do this in the last couple months since George St. Pierre decided to walk away. And this time the UFC immediately cut him, which is very odd. But he actually apparently asked for and was given his release from the contract. So I don't know whether they just decided to cut him because they wanted a release or what was going on there. But there was a big headline the other day that cut him.
Yeah, well, from what I heard, he just said he was tired of working the ground game. He'd made some progress at it, but he says he just didn't have the passion for the ground game, so he was considering a return to pro kickboxing. So,
yeah, he says, not saying I will never do MMA again, but right now I just hit people. He says, MMA has been great to me, and I will always be company in the sport. I want to thank all my fans, sponsors, and fans for being with me on this journey. So basically, he wants to explore some options and try to get back to his roots and his roots are in kickboxing. So he has an 18-6-1 record in kickboxing, fought three times for K1, and he had a 3-0 record in his debut. The rest is history, I guess. Yeah. Hang him up. It's a pretty interesting story from the UFC. At least since a recent article on MMAOddsBreaker.com, Chris Lieben spoke with another fellow UFC vet, Frank Trigg, and opened up about his rugged chin. He says, it really is better now. The bottom line is, especially when with all the illegal drugs, I was spending all the money I was making anyway, 6-1, half dozen in the other. I used to fight the way I fought. I didn't give a shit. Fuck this, I could die tomorrow. Let's go out there and I'm going to fucking kill this guy. That fire, I'd be lying if I said that fire was still in me these past couple fights. It has been. I hate to admit it, but shit's going okay at home. My life's all right. I'm a lot more mellow of a guy. I'm just getting older, I guess. I don't even know. I don't know how to explain it. So he has tested positive for illegal substances and post-fight drug testing. Stan Ozolol, following a unanimous decision loss to Michael Bisping in 2008, got him suspended for 9 months. And back in 2011, he was suspended for 1 year when he tested positive for oxymorphone and oxycodone. So saying that he spent all his money on drugs is not really that crazy to think about. So. There's a little bit of a tipping point this week for testosterone replacement therapy. The Association of Ringside Physicians made a statement that condemned treatment and called for its that sport. Once that was done, of course, Dana White came out of the woodwork, and he was, quote, thrilled by the offer a ban on TRT. And White also said he hopes that the State Athletic Commission won't grant any therapy to Vitor Belfort, which we still clear. But White has been kind of turning against TRT since saying that he thought it was cheating. But there's absolutely 100% against it. Once Lyra the Machine defeated Dave Henderson, he's actually White had this some situations in the UFC where I said, you know what, that's bullshit. At one point I was like, hey, listen, it's legal, but it's unfair. Stronger, faster, more explosive, all the same ones. Performance enhancing recovery ability, like after you train faster, especially if you're gentle. That's my problem with it, so this is one area where I agree. Most of these fighters who are doing it under the radar are doing it, they're ready for fights. So they're not on. That they're going to get back in for your COVID test. They're not back training camp. They're going to start with that power that they're going to bring in. And a lot of people can't do over for that's unfair advantage. Faster than somebody who's not. Somebody just picked on their microphone there. Thank you, Tom.
Hello?
Yeah? Okay. We're hearing a lot of interference on your end, I think. It's like wind.
I don't... it's awful quiet where I'm at, so I don't know.
Oh. Well, it stopped. So, anyway. Like I said, I was talking about TRT. It was another story this week. In addition to Dana White coming out there and talking about this. And this was actually on a Canadian site. And it's suggesting that once you do any kind of testosterone treatment or anything like that, the benefits stay with you for life. And this points to a 2006 study involving powerlifters. And this is a pretty long time ago for this to... just be coming out now. But basically, this study found out that the athletes continued to enjoy advantages over their clean peers years after they stopped using these performance-enhancing drugs. Specifically, the research concluded that, quote, based on the characteristics between doped and non-doped powerlifters, we conclude that a period of anabolic steroid usage is an advantage for a powerlifter in competition even several years after they stopped taking it.
Wow, that I had never heard that before.
Me either. That should be a big
that
revelation.
Seems like
it,
that seems like a stretch, but I'd like to see more of the study. That seems like a real stretch to me. Years.
Hmm. Well, it goes on here. It says, in a study published last year in the Journal of Physiology, researchers looked into long-term benefits of anabolic steroids after discontinuing and concluded that, quote, brief exposure to anabolic steroids might have long-lasting performance-enhancing effects, unquote. And the study involved mice who were treated with testosterone. So there you have it, straight from the source of this controversial testosterone. Study has been done. So the researchers hypothesized that PED use can result in a 10-year advantage in human beings, even after discontinuing.
Wow.
And are currently working with the help of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, who is funding further exploration of the topic. So, that's a couple studies there that show that PEDs can give you a long-term benefit even after you're off of them. So that should give some pause to these people who are thinking, you know, yeah, let's keep it up and keep going with it. It's working. As even a little can go a long way, apparently. You know, you still have to consider the health, the side effects. You know, we're still learning about those problems with these type of treatments. And, you know, most fighters always hear, you know, if you're going to do steroids, you're going to, you know, your balls are going to shrink, you're going to get acne, and, you know, those traditional side effects. But testosterone can be a lot worse because there's been studies that say 35% of people who have been using these testosterone replacement therapies end up having heart attacks. This is just the general population of fighters, but you know, there's bound to be a situation where this that happens to a fighter who's been doing it too much. So I'm actually going to go on record for once in my life. I agree with Dana White.
You heard it here first, Tony. This is going to be a keeper. You heard it here first.
I want to get some rocks on, sprinkle it over where Helms froze over.
Actually, Dana White's been pretty busy lately. He had to break up a fight on the Ultimate Fighter Brazil. Actually, I was there for filming, but he did He did give the report. He actually broke the news. He says Wanderlei and Chimp fought yesterday. They literally fought. And he hesitated about whether or not he should actually reveal that interview. But he went ahead and did it anyway. Obviously figured he'd probably be good press. He says, while they were fighting, one of Wanderlei's guys sucker-punched Chael. It went on for a while. And obviously they're going to fight inside the cage eventually. It's on a reality show. It says white is good and it's bad. A fight didn't break up between these two for people to be excited about this fight because these two have been at each other's throats. So that's wild. I mean, typically, when you have a fight in the house or something, you guys get thrown out between the coaches. It's going to be interesting. You've got to handle it. Of course, there's Diaz. We don't have Nick Diaz anymore in the UFC to talk about. So. And Nate had quite the Twitter rant the other day. He's obviously comes from an unspoken family. There's been some real outbursts between Nate and Dana White because White posted on that he turned down the fight with Khabib. Was that no, I didn't, and that Nick White is just so obviously the relationship. But he basically just went on a rant and put it all out there. For some reason, I don't have any of his rant in here. But it's interesting to me that the UFC wouldn't try to keep disciplining him anyway. Try to tell him to get with the program. They've done that to other people for doing much less. But apparently they're treating him differently for some reason. I don't know if you heard anything on this, Tom, but I'm sure you're familiar with Helwani, right?
Right.
Big time, Tim and Big. Well, big guy. And he's a journalist covering his day since 2006 when I first met him. But he's been on the rocks with the UFC. For UFC on Fox 10, he was not with the media section. He was actually proud. He said that everybody will understand, but he's completely absent from all the Fox coverage. He wasn't even invited to the pre-fight media scrum or anything like that. Obviously, people started rumors that he was been fired. But he said, but trust me, all's well on this defense. Time to go cover some. And I haven't heard anything since I read this a few days ago, so there might be an update.
Yeah, that's the first I've heard of this.
But obviously there's some big news happening with him. And if it's something where he's actually getting snubbed by the UFC, I would bet that whatever his opportunity is, it's not with the UFC. But it would be really interesting because, you know, that would alienate a lot of people that he works with. And, you know, if he's still going to be trying to do his show there, interviewing people, it would be tough to be doing it without the UFC, for example. Now, there's been some talk over the last few episodes. We talked about Johnny Hendricks and George St. Pierre, that fight, and what happened after George St. Pierre walking away from the sport. But now, apparently, Dana White thinks, you know, George St. Pierre didn't really walk away because of the steroid issues. He's trying to get drug testing done. White claims it has more to do with the fact that he said Johnny Hendricks should have been the rightful winner of the UFC 167. And this is straight from Dana White. He says, George is a little upset with me. George is upset with me because I said I thought Johnny Hendricks won the fight. Let me tell you what, who has said more nice things about George St. Pierre over the last 10 years? Nobody. His parents don't talk about this because of anything. So at the time, I don't think he won the fight. I'm always very honest in my opinions and what I think, and he's upset about it. But at the end of the day, he should have picked up the phone and made a phone call to say that we're not, first of all, George St. Pierre wanted to do the extra drug testing in another fight that he's in. Never tested positive for any clinic. And the guy has defended the title 9 times. He wanted to do the extra testing in the Hendricks fight. The other fighters, he's not on drugs. So he said, let's have Johnny do it, too. We both wanted to do separate companies, just like boxing. And that's never going to work out. Then he criticized us for not making it happen. They're being drug tested by the government. The government is in their testing. We have the most stringent drug testing. We have not, but boxing, too. So his statements were crazy. Makes no sense. He's just upset. He's upset with me, so why he'd make those statements, I don't know. I'm assuming that's why. So he's crazy. He's way out of line. We don't talk about wrestling a lot on this show, but I thought I would add the story to it. This is a big deal for a wrestling team down in Stillwater. And actually, we had an Oklahoma wrestler not too long ago, the guy that was heckling Chael Sonnen. A few weeks ago, we had him on, drawing a blank on his name. Oklahoma State wrestling team. Now finally has something to feel really good about because this ninth-ranked team Had a big night last Friday, putting together their most complete dual performance of the season. And they beat Iowa State 29-3.
Whoa.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Nine of the 10 matches against Iowa State, including bonus point victories from number 5, John Morrison, at 133 pounds, and number 3, Alex Dieringer, at 157 pounds. But that's pretty big for them. I mean, Iowa State isn't, as dominant as they used to be, I guess. They've got a 6-3 record, but it's one of the biggest names in wrestling, period. So it's great for a team like Oklahoma to come in and do something like that, Oklahoma State. Speaking of, different story of wrestling. Jonathan Brooks is moving down 3 weight classes, and he's going to start his new career on the regional circuit. This is an Ultimate Fighter winner, champion, Jonathan Brookins. He's decided to go on a brief retirement after his last fight, and now he's just signed a new deal with Legacy Fighting Championship. And he will debut at 125 pounds before 21st. At the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, also in Oklahoma. So speaking of Oklahoma, I should have said the story. Speaking of Oklahoma, Brookins is 13-6, and he beat Michael Johnson in the finale of that season 3 years ago, and he went 1-3, getting finished in his final 2 featherweight fights under the UFC banner. So we'll see what happens. But, you go down 3 weight classes, usually you bring a little bit of power with you. So it's a pretty big deal. He's taking it that seriously. He lost that much weight. Some bad news coming out about Alexander Gustafsson. Obviously, his big claim to fame is the tough fight he gave to John Jones. A lot of people thought he won. BJPenn.com recently reported that Gustafsson once served 15 months in a Swedish prison for charges of grievous bodily harm. And it appears he has a number of convictions for aggravated assault, including a year and 3 months in prison. And he faced that first charge when he was just 15 years old. And Gustafsson said about this, I was young and stupid. The time in prison, it was hard. He said a great amount of energy without clear direction as the reason for his troubles during his youth. He also goes on to say MMA is the main reason for his turnaround. So the bottom line is everybody makes mistakes, and, some people overcome them and some people don't. And obviously he did, so should be kind of a positive story. But Dana White, another Dana White story. Now he's telling stories about how he used to beat the crap out of Tito Ortiz when they used to box. So it kind of brings a new angle to that whole fiasco of Dana White and Tito Ortiz supposedly boxing. They did a whole show on Spike TV about their supposed boxing. That actually never happened. So now it's kind of looking like maybe Tito backed out because he didn't want to get beat. Dana, I want to believe Dana. He says, the reality is I used to beat the living shit out of Tito Ortiz back when we first bought this company and we used to box. But he didn't say he would get his ass kicked by Tito in cage. I'm not trying to sound like a tough guy, and I don't talk about the thing a lot, but I was ready, in great shape, and Tito bailed on the thing. Because Tito knew he was going to get his ass whooped on national television. If I could go back in time, I wouldn't do it. He asked for a boxing match with me, and I would have beat the living shit out of Tito, he said. And he knows it, and that's why he didn't do it. Really. I definitely don't know.
Yeah, no, I wonder what Tito's version... What Tito's version of that'll be?
Well, he probably won't be given it anytime soon because he's in all kinds of legal trouble down there. He's not been in the public eye lately. He doesn't want to answer those questions on why he's a drunk. We have to talk about the UFC fights. UFC on FX on Fox 10 over the weekend, and now coming UFC 169. Big one. It's Regan Barao versus Uriah Faber in the event. Well, nothing looking forward to that one, but first we got to talk about last week's event. Ben Henderson beat Josh Thompson by split decision. It's not a very entertaining fight. Josh Thompson injured his right hand very early in the fight. Broke. So he didn't have much in the way of striking after that. And Henderson just kind of had the right strategy to come out on top. He's pretty impressive doing it. You know, especially when you know the guy's got a broken hand. You figure it should be wash, you know, for the other guy.
Yeah, the crowd was not too happy with the decision, and a lot of talk on the internet about the decision too. It was close. I could see that Josh could make a case for pulling it off, but I don't think it was a gigantic robbery. I don't know, Rich, what your feelings are on it.
Well, I mean, I really didn't watch it closely enough to judge it personally myself. From the moment that I saw it, it looked like Benson has it under control. So I don't think
so. Yeah, to me, it was the kind of fight that if we had draws, I would not have been upset with the draw. You know, we don't see too many draws, but it wouldn't have bothered me at all.
Well, I don't think it hurts either guy's stock. Maybe Ben Henderson is going to have a longer time to try to get another title shot now because he didn't turn enough heads. But Josh Thompson will be back, I'm sure. He'll be around for a while. He's definitely established himself as a gamer.
Well, now Josh Thompson was actually talking about he's going to have to think about his future. He was very depressed over this decision. I mean, he feels with all his heart that he won that fight. And he's kind of upset with himself for taking a fight because he did have a title shot coming up. And he's just not in a good frame mentally. And like he said, you know, this took weeks to get ready. I took more shots to the head than most NFL players, and they get paid a lot more. I mean, he was not sounding good about his future. So maybe it's just an emotional reaction and a huge letdown. I mean, I hope he's not going to give it up, but he is 36 years old, which in that sport is getting up there a little bit. And he's been around forever, so I hope he sticks around, but we'll see what happens.
Well, second time I said it right here. He's going to stick around.
There you go.
Your buddy there, Stipe Miocic, got the job done. His decision over Gabriel Gonzaga and broken hands. I don't know if you saw the pictures, but I did, of Gonzaga's hand after that fight.
Yeah,
they
were pretty ugly. Pretty ugly. Yeah.
Swollen mess. So, he actually did a really good job in the first round trying to test it. But a couple of things happened. I think, one, he hurt his hand there somewhere in the first round. Two, he gassed himself out. And this showed that his conditioning needs a lot of work. Stipe has obviously got a slimmer build. He's got a lot less weight to carry around. And he used that to his advantage. He was really slick, very cautious. He didn't look at any point like he was in desperation or anything like that. He just weathered everything that Gonzaga threw at him. And, you know, he looked like he was kind of a little bit flustered in the first round, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, I gave Gonzaga a slight edge in that first round, even though two of the three judges disagreed with me. But I think Stipe stuck to his game plan. I got some calls from some of my old training partners in the gym, and some of these guys are hypercritical, and they should know better. They're saying, well, Stipe didn't give enough lateral movement. He didn't have enough head movement. He was pulling straight back. He got hit a little too much. Well, everyone gets hit, but, you know, Gonzaga is still a dangerous fighter. I think that part of Gonzaga's problem is he's apparently training himself. The feeling I get from the facility he has, he's the top dog there. Now, he'll bring in guys to work with, but I'm just kind of an old-school guy, and I think to really get in tip-top shape for something like a big fight, you need someone staying on you. You don't quit when you want to quit. You quit when your trainer tells you to quit. And if you're the trainer, I think it's affected him. And the only proof I have is what we've seen Saturday night and what we've seen in the past from him. That's kind of always been on the rap on him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he would be a different fighter if he was fighting out of Jackson's camp or something.
Right.
Duke Rufus there, but he's a Massachusetts guy. He's got his old school ways. He's got his whole team link, he calls it. And I know he works with a guy named Marcos Alban, who is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. And just a tough guy all around. I don't know if he fights himself, but he's, I think, the primary trainer that works with Gabriel. I don't know of anybody else personally that works with, so he might benefit from something.
So I guess it's an interesting question where each guy goes, because I think Stipe certainly didn't hurt his stock at all. I mean, there was some complaints, like someone made a comment on one of the forums, oh, great point karate win or something like that. But, hey, bottom line, he did what he had to do. He was disciplined. He stuck with the game plan. His cardio and conditioning took over, and I'm not going to be overly critical. He did the job, so I think he's close to a top five guy, but I think he's a couple fights away from any kind of even talk of a title shot at this point. And Gonzaga, just not sure where he's going, if he's going to be in the gatekeeper category.
Yeah, he'll stick around, I'm sure. There's always people that mention him. And, he's coming back from practice, so he's been pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, he's still 4-2. Yeah, he's still 4-2 since he came back. And I wouldn't count him out.
One of those names that is big enough to where the UFC gives him the decision on when he can fall down. But I think it's up to him, really.
Yeah.
But I don't see him fighting for a couple more years. Probably to be a coach himself. Anyway, let's get through this. I mean, he's still going to cover, still going to preview this. So, Donald Cerrone beat Adriano Martins by knockout head kick.
Cowboy.
Hey, that was an exciting fight. I liked that one. I thought Cerrone really prepared himself well and went in there looking good. And apparently he's already spent all the money.
Well, I'll say this much. I do think he's rediscovered that fire. Now, whether it's out of financial necessity or he's just deciding he's getting older and he's going to give it one more shot, but I just felt going into this, no disrespect to his opponent, but I just felt that this we were going to see the old cowboy, and I think he's got a few good fights left in him for sure.
Definitely. And we had Jeremy Little-Heathen Stevens get another win over Darren Elkins. That was a unanimous decision fight. I was really impressed with Stevens' game plan on that one. He was throwing some real pretty uppercuts and doing some outstanding boxing in that fight. And,
yeah.
But
Elkins,
got to give credit. I mean, talk about heart. And that kid just kept getting up and kept coming forward and kept trying to do something, even though it was never the right thing. He just kept trying.
I think he really needs to focus on his stand-up game. I mean, because you got all the toughness in the world, all the cardio in the world, but if you can't get your opponent down and you're taking a bad beating on your feet, you've got to go to war on your feet. And he was trying, but just a day late and a dollar short. But I do think that Stevens has found the right weight division for him because he has not lost since he dropped down, and he looked great.
Man, Bruce Leroy pulled off the upset of the week, I think.
Oh, what a shock.
Good round, rear naked choke. And Bruce Leroy was really not doing all that great before that happened. His real name is Alex Caceres here, just to be clear. Sergio was undefeated until this fight, and this is his UFC debut, so does not look good for his stock. But, you know, maybe he needed this at this stage of his career. Now he's human, and he's in the big leagues now.
Exactly, because, you know, you heard the build-up that he's far more talented than his brother. And whenever these guys have that air of inevitability about them, sometimes a loss is the best thing that could have happened. I mean, I thought the fight was going to be over in the first round. And I remember saying to everyone watching with me, I said, well, I don't see it going to the distance. Well, it didn't, but it was the wrong. They're a different guy, but... Hey, congratulations to Bruce Leroy. I mean, he kept his cool. Got to be impressed with the guy.
Yeah, we'll give him credit. He definitely looks a little bit more improved. He was a little more aggressive than I've seen him in his last couple fights, so maybe that'll work out for him. But, you know, he's definitely got to string together some more wins if he wants to stick around. Sergio is probably going to get a few shots too, but... good for him for a debut to go down like that. Then we had Eddie Wineland beat Eve TKO in the second round. We had Chico Camus beat Yautz Meza by Chico Viana, Ramiro Hernandez by unanimous decision. In the third fight of the night, Darren Cruikshank beat Mike Rio by wheel kick and punches knockout. That was 4:56 marks, 4 seconds left in the seventh. In the second fight of the night, George Sullivan beat Mike Rhodes by unanimous decision. And in the opener, Nikita Krylov beat Walt Harris by head kick and punches, TKO. Round there. And there's our blog talk radio lady. We still have to go over this weekend. UFC 169, Renan Barao, 31-1, with no draws. Fight Uriah Faber, 36. And this is a rematch, of course.
Hey, Rich, 1 second. I'm just going to, I got to log off.
Okay.
I got a few things I got to do to finalize the city of Haven. So, everybody have a great weekend. Austin and Lisa, I will talk to you gentlemen next week.
All right, guys.
Disregard Blog Talk Radio Lady folks, because we're going to go into a couple minutes of overtime to get this done. So, as I mentioned, Uriah Faber rematch, big rematch. He lost the first one, did not look good, but he has been looking really dominant in his last few fights, so you'd never count that guy out. And Barao, he has been dominant since the beginning, really. He only lost one fight in his whole career, so... He is always a tough competitor. And,
I'm just glad I'm not one of the odds makers on this one. This is, wow. Because Faber, as I've said before, Faber seems to have regained that form that he had in like the 2005 to 2008 time frame when he was just at the absolute top of his game. He did what he wanted. He just really, his stand-up could have improved, but he really didn't need it a lot. He was so adept at getting the fight to the ground, and he just controlled everything. So I'd hate to bet against him. On the other hand, look who he's fighting. So this is, and both guys know, especially Uriah, because Uriah has come up short in his past five title fights. Now, there's always been maybe good reasons for it, but I think the pressure is really on him to shine Saturday night.
Right. And we have another title holder, Jose Aldo, 23-1, fighting Ricardo Lamas. Lamas is 13-2. I don't know a whole lot about him. I know I've seen him fight at least once or twice, but Jose, I've never been against Jose.
Well, this Lamas is he's a very solid guy. I'm not going to go completely out on the limb and predict an upset, but I will say this has potential fight of the night written all over it. Because I don't think Lamas is intimidated, and I don't think he's showing up to roll over.
All right. Then the third fight, the co-main event, but the co-main event, you could call it. It's a heavyweight matchup between Frank Mir and Alistair Overeem. And this one has an interesting dynamic because you've got Frank Mir, who's kind of been a journeyman type of fighter. He's probably never going to get another chance at the title. If he beats Alistair Overeem, Overeem's automatically pretty much done with the UFC. He's out. Frank Mir loses. I think he's just been around so long with the organization that it's going to be one of those situations where they might ask him to retire, but they're not going to demand or cut him.
Well, it's hard to say. I know when I was a kid, they had pro wrestling was very different then. It was more of a regional thing. And they would have these matches called Loser Leave Town. And I kind of get the feeling here that Overeem will definitely be gone. And Mir, you know, when you look, I think Mir's made his UFC debut in 2001, I believe. I think he goes back that far. So, I mean, that's been a long career, great success. And then he had that motorcycle accident and went on quite a slump, but then he came back, and then it's been up and down and up and down. So this has that feel of it to me, that this is almost a last chance for both these guys, because even if they don't cut Mir if he would lose, I just get the feeling that his best days are long behind him. But he's been surprising in the past, so we'll see what happens. I think we have another clash of styles here. I think on the ground, Overeem would be really at high risk for being submitted. But on the feet, I think even though Mir has decent stand-up, I don't think it's in Overeem's league. So should be a good one.
Yeah, I like Overeem. I think he's going to take this one. But if you don't keep Frank Mir around, who are you going to have Brock Lesnar fight when he comes back to the UFC?
Well, we hear rumors, but I don't know. I think if Brock wouldn't have got sick, but it seems like he really, especially in that last fight, you've seen what those body shots did to him, and we'll never know how a healthy Brock Lesnar could have been. I mean, I would question as I've said before, his evolution didn't seem to go the way I was kind of hoping it would go. And before the Overeem fight, when his lead trainer came on and made that famous comment, well, Brock's stronger now than he's ever been. I thought, well, that should be a load off the minds of the Brock Lesnar fans, because his problem before was he just wasn't strong enough, right? Come on. Jeez. So I just don't see Brock coming back. But it would be interesting if he does. I'll be watching for sure.
Yeah, I think it could happen for a limited basis, three fights or so, maybe. Definitely.
Yeah, well, I've definitely seen stranger things happen in my life, okay? So, you know, that's for sure. I've seen far stranger things, but this one I just, now, is he, I understand he's still in the pro wrestling deal, right? He's
right.
Still doing that?
Okay,
okay, so...
Vince McMahon had publicly said that he would be open to Brock going back to fight the UFC and still remain under WWE contract. But we know that Dana White doesn't like those things.
Yeah.
He can have something out. But then again, you know, Dana White's changed his mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I guess it would beg the question, though, that what are we going to see with Brock this time if he comes back as a different is he going to come back lighter? Is he going to come back quicker? Is he going to keep? Is he worked on his stand up? Is he improve? Does he have a new training camp? I mean, there's a whole ton of questions I'd like answered, but guess all things in due time.
Right. We'll talk about it when we don't ever get to talk about it. But anyway, getting back to the UFC 169. Here we got John Lineker at Magatanov fighting lightweight here. Lineker's 23-6, and Magatanov is 12-2. That should be pretty decent right there. We got Jamie Varner in action, 21-8-1, fighting Abel Trujillo, who's 11-5. We got John McDessie back in action. He's 12-2, fighting Helen Patrick Alves. Yeah. Pretty evenly matched stuff there. Got Cariasso, who's 15-5. Danny Martinez, who's 16-4. And we got Nick Catone, 9-4, fighting Tom Watson, who's 16-6. They got a tough veteran, Al Iaquinta, 7-2-1, fighting Kevin Lee, who's 7-0. And another more recent tough graduate, Clint Hester, 9-3, fighting Andy Enns, 7-0. Another guy from the same season, I think. Then we got Neil Magny, 8-3, fighting Gassan Umalatov, who is 14-2-1. And then we got Rashid Magomedov, 15-1, fighting Tweed, who is 8-0. So that's it. UFC card for Saturday. That's it for the show. We've been out of time.
Okay. Yeah, hopefully things will calm down a little bit for me next week, and I'll be checking in for the usual time. Do we have a guest lined up for next week, or do you know?
We do not have one, but Tony is working on a boxer, and I am still trying to get Master Ron Van Cleef. I haven't tried to reach out to him about rescheduling. The first time I tried to get him on, he had a conflict with a flight. So.
Yeah, he'll be fun, because back in the early 70s, I remember seeing, they didn't have videos back then, but they did have books. And I remember seeing him in a lot of the Karate Illustrated books, and I have to tease him because his hair was a little darker back then. He's a little on the gray side now, but he's also, let's see, how old is he now? Probably pushing 70, I would guess. Getting up there. But, yeah.
We'll find out more as the days go on. I'll try to get an earlier notice to you guys. Get a preview up there. Based on who we have next week. Okay, then, everybody, for stopping by and spending some time with us and getting the rundown here.
Okay, let's get ready for the big weekend.
Yes, sir. And, we'll have to talk about the Super Bowl, too, next week, even though we're not a football show.
Yeah, I guess there was a story there about one of the ring girls that had the UFC belt. I know it's too late in the show to get on all that stuff, but apparently the NFL kicked him out. And what's that belt? That's wrestling. That ain't the NFL. Get out of here. But that's for a whole other topic. So, all right, next week we'll do it up.
All right.
Let's enjoy the fights this weekend. We got a lot of good ones. Over and out.
All right, folks. Adios. Till next week. They're signing off.